The secret behind the world's elite leaders with Don Barden. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
All right, Don Barden from 3CI and Perfect Plan. Welcome to Veteran on the Move. Thanks for being here today. And we're going to get to talking about business and entrepreneurship in a moment. But before we do that, take us back and tell us about your background.
Well, hey, Joe, thank you for having me. I love what you're doing, your commitment to Veterans on the Move and just helping folks out means the world to me and the people all over the place. And I don't know if you get to hear thank you enough, but I want to take a second and tell you that. So thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure. Well, my story as far as veterans and entrepreneurism and just military life in transition is rather unique, but I think everyone probably thinks that about themselves. I grew up as a little bit of an Army brat. My dad was Occupation Forces, 3rd Army. He was a tank guy. He was actually in Patton's Army, although Patton passed away right before he got there. So I kind of grew up in the Army and grew up around it, mostly stationed out of Fort Benning and Fort Knox. And it was just a big, big part of my life. So I owe a lot of that success to my success today to how I was raised and what the Army, you know, did for me, you know, as a child and sort of my dad putting some of that influence on me. But I also grew up in the draft era. So I'm betting I'm a little bit older than you. And it was I was one of those guys who just barely missed the draft. They ended it right before my numbers started to come up. But I was in that 2-year period where they sent you a card and a notice just in case. So it was one of those, it's over, but is it really over? You know, and you constantly had to think about that. Because growing up, that's all I knew. I knew the military. I knew older guys in the neighborhood in the Vietnam era were going away. And unfortunately, most of them didn't come back. So it kind of started to give impressions of things in life and what was going on in my head. And then when it became time for me to be eligible, my dad actually encouraged me not to. He said, look, kid, I want you to go and get an education. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And he said, look, he said, I want you to go do this and then make a decision afterwards. And before you jump full force, let's do this. But I guess I'm telling you this because early on, I started to pay attention and I started to see what was happening to a few friends of mine who had gone in and served their time. But also what's happening afterwards and how they were struggling a little bit with the transition and coming out of it. And although my personal path went uniquely in a different direction, I always had that in my mind and I was always focused on that. And I was committed to helping any veteran, any active service member, anyone, anytime with anything. And so the fortitude of my being was based around that from a very, very early age. I was just groomed to do this, I guess is the best way to say it. But I continued on with my education and technically by true scholarly trade, I am an economist. I'm a behavioral economist. I went on to grad school and doctorate and focused on more around decision-making processes than I do yield curves and interest rates. I think those are a little bit boring, and it's yesterday's news. I was always really concerned about why people make decisions that they do, what drives people to think the way that they do. And if we could look at people's thought processes, then how could we change things in the future for the better? If people are as predictable as we think they are, and they are, then how can we use our knowledge to make it a better world out there? So I started sort of a corporate route. I spent about 25 years on Wall Street as an economist working on domestic and international business. Got to travel around the world 7 times. So when the Army and the Navy says, yeah, come see the world, I just did it on the corporate route. But I started noticing that everyone around the world was exactly the same. That it didn't matter who you were with, what culture, what language you were speaking, if you kissed, if you bowed, if you shook, if you did anything, that at the end of the day, when you peel things back, that people were exactly the same. They still had the same hopes and dreams, the same family issues, the same everything, frankly. So I was actually able to commission a study, a doctoral study, that wanted to focus on not only the decision-making process, but what these elite people did differently, what the best of the best did that separated them in their mental capacity, their thinking, the way they think about their thinking. And we were able to put it together. It's been published in about 39 countries now. And it's kind of given me the platform to go out and give back to those that I always wanted to. And that's planting seeds in veterans and active military people to go out and become entrepreneurs themselves. So my unique path took me in a way that allowed me to own some pretty good sized businesses, to work with some really incredible people. But it was never about just say, how much money can I put in my bank account? It was more about, okay, what can we do to turn this around to help these folks around the world really be the best they can be afterwards, and their children and their families, and sort of thank them again for what they've done, the unique path, the career that they chose. But now what can we do? You know, what can we do to help them continue on to move to a different phase and make that transition? So my life's a little unique, but it's all now back to saying, how can we take these incredible resources, the academic capital we've got, and turn it back to helping folks, you know, be the best they can be, especially veterans and their families.
You've done a lot of work in the corporate world and a lot of training and speaking and motivational type stuff. What kind of direct what kind of direct experience do you have with helping people getting started in entrepreneurship or running their own business?
Yeah, the best entrepreneurs honestly have the skill set that the military teaches you. To be an entrepreneur, I always joke, the purest definition of that really of an entrepreneur is someone who promises what they do not have with every intention of delivering it on time. And if you think about that from a military perspective, how perfect is that? You know, you say, yeah, we can do this. I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to do it. And we're going to do it on time. So that sort of orientation is sort of inbred into you in the military process. But entrepreneurs are all about being mission oriented, believing that it's bigger than yourself. Whatever this thing you're doing is bigger than you. Entrepreneurs also understand that they cannot do it alone, that it takes a well-oiled machine and a trained group of people around that. They're all on that same focus. But most importantly, when I tell people about, you know, taking that entrepreneurial plunge, particularly, again, back to veterans, is look, there's something I tell them, the one thing that most people make a mistake in owning your own business or being an entrepreneur is realizing that you can either lead or you can be in charge, but you cannot do both. And you have to be able to separate that and say to yourself, okay, I've got this incredible idea, this mission. I understand it's going to be bigger than me. I understand I can't do it alone, but what's my role going to be? Am I going to be the leader? Am I going to be someone who continues to drive and motivate and inspire people to move toward that mission? Or am I going to get my hands dirty? Am I going to be in charge? I'm going to be there on the front lines, making the calls and doing what it takes. Now, in the beginning, especially the first few months of any new business, you're probably doing all of it. But ultimately, what you want is a self-managed organization that you've driven and created in your mind, but you're either the leader or you're in charge. But please, please, please don't try to do both. And I think if people can get that around, mission orientation, bigger than you, can't do it alone, and leader be in charge, but you can't do both, then it sort of sets them free to go out and use their God-given potential to maximize the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for pointing that out. That's a huge thing. And I see veterans fall victim to that all the time. And military spouses trying to do it all on their own. A lot of times the motivation behind that is just, I can't afford to hire someone else to do it for me. So they have this inaccurate perception of, well, I guess I got to do it all by myself until I start making lots of money. But the problem is you can't really scale, and you won't be making large amounts of money if you're doing it all yourself, because you lose that big blue arrow, that 30,000 foot view of the business if you're in the grind every day. And so thanks for pointing that out. And I fell victim to it myself. It's easy to do, but you know, go back to your military training if you find yourself in this position, because we always used to say, you as a unit leader, if you take a round in the grape right now, if your unit falls apart with you not there, then you haven't done your job. Your job as a leader is to set the organization up so that it runs without you, not depends on you.
Yeah, amen. That's the self-managed organization. You need to be free, because your job in leadership is to look at the future, not look at today. And to be saying to yourself, okay, this is working or it's not working, but what's it going to be like in 6 months, in a year? What is our mission? And how do we continue to orientate ourselves toward that mission? And if you're in the weeds too much, then you'll never be able to see out beyond that. And most entrepreneurs can see something and they visualize it and they want to go straight to the launch. You know, they're like, hey, this is a great idea. Let's go open up a new bakery, or let's go start building homes or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. But they want to go jump right into it. In reality, you've got to test it and you've got to validate it. And it's going to take some time, and it needs to be done through another set of eyes, because most entrepreneurs, when they get all, you know, starry-eyed and they want to jump into this great new idea they've got, you need the passion, you need the energy, but you also need somebody else to say, hey, wait a minute, have you done this? Have you checked this? Have you done this? And that helps balance the thing. But you're right. But when it's your baby, when you're excited and you want to do it, you know, you're not going to let anything stand in your way, but you need to step back and say, okay, what am I going to do to make this self-managed? Because you are 100% right, Joe. If it cannot operate without you being there, you failed.
Absolutely. Now, I noticed reading some of your stuff, you referred to systems and processes quite a bit. And really, if you're trying to run your own business and you're trying to free yourself up from the day-to-day grind of working in the business instead of working on your business, the way to your freedom of being consumed by the business on a day-to-day basis is the implementation of systems and processes.
Yeah, all day long. Just like the military. If you go back to that type of metaphor, I do a tremendous amount of work with the Army Rangers, 1st Battalion, 75th Regiment out of Hunter Airfield down in Savannah. And, you know, they're airborne rangers. I mean, they bring problems from the sky. You know, you wouldn't want to be on the ground seeing them coming at you. But if they're there to liberate, then you're cheering. But it's all about processes in the military. You know, the person on the right and left is doing their job. The person who's flying the plane is doing their job. The person who packs their chute is doing their job. Your job is to do your job. And you think, well, that's okay. I just got this one thing to do. Yeah, so focus on that. But there's actually hundreds of things going on at one time. And to do that, then somebody had to sit back with a very schematic mind and say, what is the process that we're going through right here? And how do we stick to it? Because so many times people get out and they get ahead of it, even in the hiring process. They want to just hire somebody because they're a good person. Well, we always say, no, hire for the position. And that fits into the process. So you should, if you have a business, you should sit back and just design it almost like a flow chart and then say, okay, well, who are we going to plug in here? Who are we going to plug in there? What happens when this happens? And then you realize that all you got to do is put the right, well-trained players in the right position, and then the process will take care of itself. So it might sound a little cold, but it's actually the best way to do it. And that's always process before people. And then put the right people in the right process, and they thrive. And most entrepreneurs do it backwards. They bring somebody on because they like them, or they're a good person, or that they think they've done something in the past that can help them out. And all of those might be true. But if you're not putting them into a proven process that, to the best of your ability, is going to work, you've actually failed them as much as you failed yourself. So it's all about process.
All right, we're back talking with Don Barden. So, Don, as long as you've been in business and an entrepreneur and a business owner, you've gone from startups to where you're running it by yourself, and then you get a few people around you, to running a very large organization, and which is what you're doing now. So, tell us how you managed to scale. You've had a couple experiences with where you scale from yourself only up to an organization where I think you have like at least 300 people working for you now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I think the first thing to do is admit failure. You know, I can tell you that when I started my first business over 30 years ago now, it was a terrible failure. And I had no point of reference. I had no relevance. I had no training. I just had this incredible amount of energy and probably twice as much naivety going into it. And I learned a lot of lessons in the very beginning. No process. I had nothing. I was just run to work every day. And I made a vital mistake back then. And that mistake was that thinking that someone would do something for you when they're not willing to do anything for themselves. And that lesson just burned in my brain forever, that how can you ask somebody to follow you? How can you ask somebody to believe in your mission? How can you ask somebody to have the passion that you've got when they just don't have it themselves. You know, they're not going to just miraculously have it. Mm-hmm. So I learned early on that it really is about the people and the process of bringing the right people in. Then most importantly, it's about making sure that they're trained. So I actually left the entrepreneurial world for a while, did the Wall Street thing for a long time, reported to some of the greatest CEOs in history. Very, very fortunate. They paid for my education. They paid for me to see the world. But in turn, I delivered. You know, I gave back to them. We did some great deals and got to meet some wonderful people, which led ultimately to the perfect plan. So it was a great thing. But when it was time for me to fulfill that itch, you know, to get back into the entrepreneurial world, I felt like I was much better prepared than obviously I was in the very beginning, because I had those experiences and I was able to take them and transition it. And it really doesn't matter if you're a group of two or three people or by yourself, or if you're like you are right now with 300 people. It's about saying to yourself, like I said earlier, what's my role? And my role here is to lead. And what's the president of our company's role? Well, his role is to be in charge. And he goes out there and he follows the processes and he continues to make sure that people are doing their jobs, that the right people are hired. And by doing so, we can scale it unbelievable, you know, fashion. But if it was just up to me, if I was the guy that had to get in there every day and do that, then I would probably sink this ship pretty fast, because that's just not what I do. My job is to look into the future and be innovative and think. That's where I perform at my best. He is wired to do exactly what he does. And everyone on the team, to the best of our ability, is put into a place where they can really be free to be themselves. And I found that when people find that, when they sort of get in the zone, then they grow at exponential rates. So it's really about checking egos, realizing that you can't do it on your own, finding out what your unique ability is and your path, following it. But if you're going to scale, if you're going to get to, you know, and we're big little, 300 employees, we're a big little company. Mm-hmm. Then it's just about watching people thrive. And I don't think there's anything better in the world, especially as an entrepreneur, than seeing people work for you and knowing that you put them in a position where they can be at their best and they're thriving and they're growing. And you say to yourself, wow, maybe this is why we're here. Maybe it wasn't this great idea I had. Maybe it was to bring these people around so that they can come here sometimes for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. But when they leave, you celebrate, because they're going to take part of you with them and they're going to go do great things, and then they'll do great things. And it starts with sort of a ripple effect in the entrepreneurial world, that sometimes you're doing things that are going to create something down the road that you're not going to see, but it's going to be awesome. And somehow the universe knows that you played a part of that.
Absolutely. So can you talk a little bit about not only entrepreneurship, but business itself is really a process. And I got hung up on this in the early days myself, where I thought that the secret sauce was that secret product, developing that secret product that nobody else had ever thought about. But I over time, I realized not only that entrepreneurship is a process, meaning you grab an idea, you run it through the process. If what comes out on the other end is a success, then great. If not, it's not that you failed as an entrepreneur. It's just that product or that service was not viable in the marketplace. But you haven't failed, because now you've gone through the process from beginning to end once. Now you go back to the beginning, you grab the next idea, you run that one through the same entrepreneurial process. And you get better and better and better at executing the process. So what I'm getting at is, can you speak a little bit to what's more important, the product or the execution of the process?
Wow, that is a great question, because you just said something that I think is very important for everyone to understand, that failure is not eternal. Failure is not something that lasts forever. So if you had this great idea, this product in your head, and you take it out and it just doesn't work, that doesn't mean it's not going to work forever. The biggest thing that I think people need to know is that the market will tell you what to do. You just need to listen. So you might have this great product and you take it out there and the market goes, no, not now. We don't understand this concept. We don't mm-hmm. understand this thing. Or better, can you just word this differently? Because I think we want this, but we just don't know. So you're constantly going back and fine tuning and getting better and better and better. Or sometimes you put something on the shelf and you say, you know, I've got this great idea, but for whatever reason, nobody else wants it right now. So there's going to be a time in the future when they do, hopefully, and I'm going to pull this thing off the shelf. But now I'm going to go back and get back to work doing what I do and following processes. And to me, the biggest process when you're trying to particularly launch a product is, number one, understand it. You know, say, is this what the market really, really wants? And then you sort of imagine it. You know, where am I going to be in 3 years? Where am I going to be in 5 years? But then most people go straight to the launch and they go, okay, let's go do it. When in reality, you're supposed to say, no, wait a minute. Okay, I understand what the market says they want. I can imagine delivering this product to them. Now I need to prototype it, and then I need to validate it, and then I can go launch it. Because if you don't prototype it and validate it, or in other words, just test it, then you don't know what you've got out there. So I think the answer to your question, Joe, is that they're both important. The product is very important if the market wants it, and you've got to listen to them. And then when the market does say they want it, then you've got to go through a process of understanding it, imagining it, prototyping it, validating it, and then you can launch it. And a fun metaphor is to think again about my airborne ranger buddies. You know, somebody had a great idea of jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. I don't know what they were thinking, but you know, maybe we can move troops faster, you know, to do it. So they said, okay, that'll work. I can imagine that happening. Let's just go give it a try. Yeah, that's a terrible idea. No, you've got to prototype the jump schedule. You got to prototype the chutes. You got to prototype the inside of the airplane. How are you going to do it? Then you got to test it and test it and test it at low altitude, or actually not even low altitude, 10 feet, you know, jump off of a, you know, a stand or something for a while and then work your way up to it. I'd hate to be the guy who decided that, you know, airborne or the parachute world, let's just go jump out and see if it'll work. No, great idea, good product. But now let's go through the process, not only to see if the market wants it, but to validate it and make sure it works when they do want it.
Right. We've made those mistakes too. You know, my wife and I have an Amazon business, and Amazon's great because you can actually go look ahead of time and see what people are looking for.
Right.
And you can figure out, is there a lot of competition for what people are? First of all, what are people looking for? Secondly, what's already there? If it's really, even though there's a lot of people looking for it, if there's a lot of people already selling it, then, you know, you got a lot of competition. So ideally you find something that's high demand, low competition.
Right.
It's not easy to find, but we've made some mistakes where we went into something that was way too competitive and we could never get anywhere. And then we went into some things that it was great products are awesome. You know, we love them. But nobody else is really looking for them.
right. The market's not ready.
We're like scratching our head. Yeah. And it's like one of those, it's like, you know, and so in business, it, you know, how it relates to everyday business, if you've got a great idea for a business and you're trying to create demand for it, then you're really heading in the wrong direction. You need to find something that people already want.
Right.
And provide a solution to that issue.
Yeah. But sometimes people, you're 100% right. Sometimes people, though, want something, they just can't verbalize it. Like Steve Jobs used to have this old saying. He said, never ask anybody what they want because they'll tell you what they need. And he said, so that might just be short term. So when he invented the very first, what was it? Not the iPod, the little bitty mixer thing. Remember the little thin thing? I forgot what he called it. The nano thing. Sorry, it seems like yesterday, but it's already been 20-something years. But he said, nobody's going to tell you they want 10,000 songs in their pocket. You know, but when you show them that, they'll go, oh, I do want that. So it's a fine balance between innovation, need, and want.
Yeah.
But you're right. In fact, I always tell people that the competition is good, right? Everybody knows that competition drives things and makes it better. But if you're jumping into a competitive market, like you were just describing, you really need to know what the word competition means. And in Greek, compendo or compendai, if it's masculine or feminine, which is the root of the word competition, compendo, it literally means static or the same, average. So if you're going into a market and say, hey, this is a competitive market, then there's a whole bunch of average out there. Or if you get in a position of saying, I've got a good product with competitive rates or competitive fees, you're really just saying, I've got the same thing everybody else has got, which means you're going to have to be fighting for just a small little niche. And that drives most entrepreneurs crazy. They don't want that. That should be a byproduct of something. Most people who want to be entrepreneur are trying to figure out something new and innovative and go out there and see what the market wants. And the market's told them they want it and that it's the right time and then drive for it. But if you just jump out there without the processes in place, you're gonna sink pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was another entrepreneurial quote. Henry Ford said, "If I asked people what they wanted, yeah. they would have told me a faster horse."
Right.
So
right,
there's definitely exactly. an interpretation of okay, I see a demand, or here's the problem. I can provide a solution.
Right.
So people are
right.
telling you what they're maybe telling you what their problem is, but so
oh, yeah. Henry Ford also said you can have any color Model T you want as long as it's black.
That's so, right.
but you know why? Because he had a process. And he was like, okay, I can't deviate from the process. They need this whole concept of an automobile, and that's what they want. We'll worry about the colors in the future. So while he might have been envisioning all these great things about what the automobile could do, he was able to stop and put a process in place and say, okay, now let's deliver what they want. Maybe you have some limitations, but from there, you know, we'll build out. And along the same thing, and this as a cool little story, it's very made up. But imagine about 110 years ago in northern Ohio, instead of having a Starbucks on every corner, you had a blacksmith, a farrier, because there weren't any cars. And, you know, everybody had horses and you had to have horseshoes. So there were blacksmiths everywhere, right? Well, out of nowhere, here comes this incredible thing they've never seen. And it drives down the middle of the road. And it's a car, a horseless carriage, an automobile. And the blacksmiths all get together and they say, oh, no. This is horrible. We have to stop this from happening. It's going to put us out of business. What's going to happen in the future when nobody wants horses anymore? Well, there were a couple of blacksmiths in the back of the room that got together and they said, hey, well, I got an idea. Let's talk about this. And their names were Firestone and Goodyear. So think about that. You know, it doesn't mean they don't want it anymore. It just means you had to be able to adapt and change yeah. to what they want and what they do need. And it's still moving somebody from A to B, but it's different than what it was. And then you put the process in place.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you remember Napster?
Oh, sure.
We had Napster. I think I pirated like, you know, 300 songs off of Napster over the course of however long it lasted.
Yep.
And when Napster got shut down and was deemed illegal and all that, for the longest time, I kept saying, you know, whoever invents the legal version of Napster, because it can be done. You know, sure. You just got to figure it out, right?
Right.
And then I think ultimately, you know, iTunes and Apple and Steve Jobs would probably get the credit for coming back later on with the legal version of Napster.
Yep.
You know, but the guy that invented Napster, you know, he was revolutionary. It just infringed upon, you know, laws and rights and stuff like that. So eventually when iTunes came around, I'm like, oh, yeah. Somebody finally invented the legal version out, right? of Napster.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Artists, there's this theory out there called steal like an artist. And artists are funny. They'll look back over history and say, oh, I was inspired by Matisse or I was inspired by Picasso. That's their way of saying, I stole all my ideas from Matisse or Picasso. Yeah. But artists can say they're inspired. And you're like, oh, that's awesome. but a business person can say, oh, I like that idea. I'm just going to do it and make it better. Oh, no. There's a legal way around that. So I think entrepreneurs need to know that. Entrepreneurs need to know it's okay to be inspired by something. Or just because they're the first ones out of the gate and they failed doesn't mean that they were wrong. They just might have launched too early. They might have not done the research they need to make sure that it was legal at the time. But you need the Napsters. We're not going to advance unless the Napsters of the world get out there and fail, because it does open the doors for other people to be inspired. And to me, that's what an entrepreneur does.
Absolutely. So Don, tell us about what you're doing and about what you do at The Perfect Plan.
Oh, thank you. The Perfect Plan is a byproduct of that doctoral study I did when I was on Wall Street, where we wanted to go out and learn what the formula, the secret sauce was about these elite people and what they did differently. And we studied everybody. I mean, we studied the best tortilla manufacturers in Mexico. We studied the best dairy farmers in Italy. You name it, we studied it. We studied restaurants. We studied businesses. We studied people in third world countries. I mean, everybody across the board. But what we were able to find out at the end was that, yeah, we know the process. We know exactly how they communicate. We know how gratification plays a role in it. We know how simplification. We know about ease of business. We know about creativity. We know about giving forward, exceeding expectations. And we basically unlocked the formula for what the elite people do differently in the world. But what was sort of the aha moment was when we realized that these elite people, whether they're entrepreneurial or just in a corporate world, but have some kind of thing about it, what we found was that, yes, they followed a very, very strict process, but they led with their heart, that they were truly servant leaders, that they weren't someone who just had a great product and was out there selling it, because that works, but usually that's a short-lived thing. You're only going to run the lifeline of the product. These people went out there and led with their heart and woke up every day and ran to work to serve other people. And they served other people as the fuel and the energy for everything they did. And in doing so, they were able to have a different mission orientation to their life, to their work, to their teams, to everything. And so what we're able to do now with a perfect plan is say, look, we've in a lot of ways just organized the obvious, but let us sit down with you, your organization, your people, or as an individual and say, look, here's the process. Here's what they follow. Here's how you do it. But you have to lead with your heart. You cannot lead because you're going to make a lot of money off of it or you're going to sell a lot of product. That'll come. But if you can lead with your heart and say, I'm really, truly here to serve other people and that I'm going to give to them without any expectation of anything in return, then imagine what you can accomplish. And so we've been able to scientifically go back and say, this is why they do it. Here's what happens in the mind. Here's the decision-making process. So we spend a lot of time with organizations and individuals training them and helping them create the process so they can go out there in whatever their unique ability is, whatever product they have, whatever mission that they're on, and hopefully take that to a completely different level. Now, most of the time, in full disclosure, anybody that's a veteran or anybody who's associated with any military organization and who's out there, we never charge for our services. It's something that we want to do for them. Because you think about a true military person, someone who's signed in for the service and the commission of what the military is all about. That, to me, is the ultimate definition of giving forward without any expectation of anything in return. It is a career choice, but it's also leading with your heart. And I'm especially proud of it today in our voluntary world. You know, we have a voluntary military now. So it's not like when I grew up, when you were sitting there going, well, what if I don't want to do this? they don't ask you. That wasn't part of the indoctrination process. Now it's, hey, you're volunteering to do this. Why are you doing this? Some people just think it's cool, career, you know, they want the training. But in the end, deep down inside, they really are part of this movement about giving forward without any expectation of anything in return. And that is the truest definition of servant leadership. But if you can take process and your mission and believe that it's bigger than you, understand you can't do it alone, and kind of get this process of, am I a leader? Am I in charge at this moment? Then you can do some great things. And so that's what we do. So we got about 300 people here. They're dedicated to doing that every day from a very much a for-profit business world, but also from a veteran's perspective, we want to help all those folks out, especially if they're in transition, either getting them a job or helping them find their way and maybe learn a process along the way so that they can help and do something great.
Okay. Well, that's great. So how do we find you?
Well, you send me an email if you want. That's the best way. It really is me. It's Don, D-O-N, at dwbarden, B as in boy, ARDEN.com. Don at dwbarden.com. And you can just reach out to me, send me an email. You can say, hey, Don, I want a copy of the book. We'll be happy to send it to you. Or, hey, have you got any classes or any videos you can send me? I'm a veteran. I'm trying to do something different. Or if not, they just want to sign up for some classes and do it. We can do that too. We really want to help everybody maximize their unique ability, their full God-given potential, and go out and take what you've learned and this experience that you've got and go do something else with it. It's time to continue on with your greatness. And if you can serve other people on the way, then that's what we're here for.
That's great. Well, hey, Don, I'll give you the last word as we close. I usually like to ask entrepreneurs, if you're talking to a fledgling entrepreneur wannabe out there, whether they're military, male spouse, anybody else that's, you know, ready to jump into the entrepreneurship world, what kind of initial advice would you have for them?
Oh, wow. How much time have we got left?
Not very much.
You know, the best advice I can give is to get in other groups of people that are going through what you're going through, to sign up for classes, to learn everything you can. And because training is all about accelerating the process, right? So you don't have to learn the hard way of some things. You can take other people's knowledge and transition it to you. So the best thing I can tell somebody who's an entrepreneur getting started is learn everything you can and be willing to accept failure and understand it's just part of the research and development process. And your greatness is out there and the impact you're going to have is out there. It might not be today. But I tell you, I sit around with a lot of CEOs and we joke that it doesn't matter if you've got 300 people, 3,000 or 30,000 employees. If you don't wake up at least once every 6 months in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, wondering what the heck you're doing, you're not in business. You know, if you haven't experienced oh my God, we're not going to make payroll this week moment, you're not in business. So it's just about preparing yourself and training and training and training. And I know you're a pilot and I always talk about, you know, pilots are such wonderful people because they're so well trained. And you, I don't know, tell me if you agree with this or not. Flying for the most part is boring. You know, I heard a pilot one time tell me that it's 99% boredom and 1% terror.
Yep.
And you train for the 1%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if everything's going right, it can feel boring, but that means it's working. You don't want to have an adrenaline rush because of the terror every time you fly. Mm-hmm. And you don't want it every time you come to work. But if you put those processes in place and you're well-trained, it'll work. But just because you've got a great idea doesn't mean a whole lot. It's, okay, do you have a great idea? And now what have I done to test this, to validate it, to know that the market, like you said, Joe, wants it. And if they want it, then you can deliver it. Wow, you got a great opportunity to do something wonderful for yourself, for the people around you, and hopefully give back to those who helped you get to where you are.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Don, for sharing your entrepreneurial success story and offering up some of your services and your book for free 99. You can't beat that price.
No, for so, free.
Yeah.
Free
99.
Oh, free 99. Okay, cool. Yeah. I've never heard that before.
You ever heard that one? Yeah. We were getting a tire change one time, like up in the mountains. And we're like, how much is this going to cost? He's like, free 99. So that's awesome. Appreciate you doing that for everybody. So look Don up if you get a chance and you want to, use some of his knowledge and some of his organization services to help you get started and get along the way. So that's it for now. So thanks, Don. Appreciate it. We look forward to seeing your future success. And we're Oscar Mike.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate everything.
As you can tell from listening to the Veteran on the Move podcast, interviews are a great way to tell your story and spread the word about your business. If you would like to get booked as a podcast guest, I recommend Interview Valet. You can check out Interview Valet at veteranonthemove.com/valet. Be sure to check out thrive15.com, the world's premier online education platform that helps entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs learn how to start or grow a successful business. Start your free 30-day membership by going to thrive15.com and use the promo code VETERAN. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.